Welcome to the Sales Lead Dog Podcast, hosted by CRM technology and sales process expert, Christopher Smith, talking with sales leaders that have separated themselves from the rest of the pack. Listen to find out how the best of the best achieve success with their team and CRM technology. And remember, unless you are the lead dog, the view never changes.
Welcome to Sales Lead Dog. Today on this episode, I have joining me Adam Custon, Senior Vice President, Sales and Marketing at Health Network One. It's a mouthful. Adam, welcome to Sales Lead Dog.
Chris, thanks for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
I'm super excited to have you on here. Adam, tell me about your current role, Senior VP Sales and Marketing in Health Network One.
Sure. So, you said the hard part, which is the title. I manage both sides of the house, sales and marketing. Health Network One is a healthcare company. We provide services to Medicaid and Medicare health plans, and we're in the middle of a very, very long value chain. And for us, since you commented on it, you know, sales and marketing is very closely intertwined. So, you know, my job is to build awareness for our organization, for our brand, and then to, you know, take the lead position in attracting and acquiring new relationships.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's why I wanted to have you on here, because it's not often I find people that have responsibility for both sales and marketing. So we're going to dive into that in a big way. When you look back over your career and you kind of just do that self-assessment, what are the three things that have really driven you to the point where you are in your career?
Yeah. Well, early in my career, I might've said fear and jealousy, which probably doesn't really make for an inspirational position. But I think the three things that that are common themes in all my roles, and I know that you or your team has had a peek at my background. I've done a couple of different things. One is curiosity, and I think that's really important, not only for myself but for the folks on my team. Is that if you're not, no one believes that their first job is going to be in this kind of arcane healthcare position. We do really great work, and I'm very, very proud of the organization that I work for and the customers that we work with. But no one wakes up believing they're going to be this guy, right? So, I mean, being curious about all different sorts of roles or industries is really important. That's served me very well and has allowed me to immerse myself in the position. The second thing is, and there have been various books written about this topic. I call it being a grinder. I love to work. I love to work through problems. I love to collaborate on those problems and to see it through to a solution. So I'm not afraid to get my hands dirty. I've worked in a lot of pioneering roles at different organizations, and then some roles that are, you know, at more established organizations. But grinding it out and really finding a way forward for me is super important. It's pretty embedded into my personality. And then I think the third thing, which might be related to the first thing, is I didn't start out as a salesperson. And I love the job that I'm doing now. I mean, I'm in love with the role. And for me, I think that's related to the broader idea of trying new things. I've done a lot of different things in my career. Some of them have been failures. Some of them have been pretty successful. I found the things that I like and I'm good at, and the things that I might like and not be good at, but I'm trying new things, I think, is important. And that I feel has kept me in a good spot to be valued by my organization, valued by my peers and customers as well.
That's awesome. Tell me about your switch into sales. What's the story behind that?
So a little bit of a survival story, you know, to a certain degree. So, I've been at this for about 30 years. So roughly the first third of my career, I was a very traditional marketing guy. You know, got my MBA in marketing, and I went and worked for a fairly large organization supporting a sales team. So I was sales adjacent for the first part of my career. And then that, you know, ran its course all the way through from this manufacturing company to a couple of professional services organizations. And then, the tech boom and bust happened. I switched industries from leading marketing and professional services company to working for some very small advertising agencies. And it became a survival skill, is that in order for me to succeed with a partner, I had to learn how to prospect for business, how to pitch business, and then obviously how to close. And if you can't do that last thing, the first two are sort of irrelevant. So that's how I gotten into it, was and very much hand to mouth. And then, you know, later on, as I led some other organizations, it became a part of my role, like at some other advertising agencies. And then that over time evolved into this position at Health Network One, where we never had a salesperson before. It was kind of a loose confederacy of accountability for sales, and for a company where the principles have been there for a long period of time that works. There's an upper boundary to that. And I think the company hit that upper boundary around the time that I came along and offered a different way forward for the organization.
Right. Right. That's awesome. That's one of the things that, you know, when I mentioned earlier, I really wanted you to have on the podcast, is because for a long time, it was like, hey, we need to connect sales and marketing and we need to collaborate and all that. Lately, what I've been hearing is we have to go beyond that. We truly have to unify sales and marketing.
Yeah.
Because they can't be, you know, a fence or barrier between them. We're just tossing stuff over the wall and saying good luck. You truly have to work together. Can you talk about, you know, coming from your background in marketing, how you create that unification at Health Network One?
Well, I'm going to do it by giving you an example of early in my career when I was in marketing and was actually the bridge between a sales organization and an engineering organization. And what we would say is that the sales organization would sell stuff that the company couldn't build, and the engineering department would design stuff that the sales guys couldn't sell. And I think that you know, so we talk about a unification, the bridge there was mm-hmm. marketing or product management, product development. So I've really embraced that idea that either of those two very valuable disciplines, siloed or independent from each other, not communicating, is probably a recipe for failure or suboptimal outcome. In my particular role, because we're selling a service, so I think immediately there's a closer intersection between, you know, service marketing, thought leadership, et cetera, than there might be with traditional product marketing. You know, I'm making statements that then I also have to, you know, help the organization fulfill. So there's even an accountability there that I can't really go, you know, get over my skis too much. Right. And again, in this particular role, we didn't have a formal sales or marketing function. So this, again, this loose confederacy of tasks, you know, or this balkanization of accountability, you know, one of my objectives was literally to bring them all under one roof. So at least we were all singing with the same voice or begun to do that. So, you know, I can give you some specific examples in terms of, you know, if I'm the guy out making a presentation about our organization, all of that, you know, is informed by the relationships I have with my peer group in terms of, you know, clinical expertise, technical expertise, you know, operational expertise. Like, I'm doing my best to, you know, embody those ideas just as the, you know, the evangelist for our organization. And that's how I'm able to do it. I don't know if that's a model for success in every organization, but certainly for us, I'm in a pretty good spot because of my awareness of what's going on in the organization to kind of channel, you know, more of a pragmatist story and not just, you know, smoke and mirrors, as sometimes what happens if a marketing or sales organization is isolated from the organization or from each other.
Yeah. So it sounds like the theme is collaboration, that not just Absolutely. Within the sales organization, but across the organization.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That is very true for Health Network One. And you know, at this stage in my career, and we just brought on a new guy and I was giving him a little bit of background about what I do and how I do it. And what I said is that there have been other stages and other organizations, and I'll use air quotes so no one thinks I'm obnoxious, but I was the smartest guy in the room for what we were doing. I was the subject matter expert for that thing. And I am not a healthcare lifer. I know enough about it to you know, engage prospects and to bring them through the sales process, but not the smartest guy in the room. And the only way for us to be successful is for me, A, to recognize that and check my ego at the door, and B, to pull in the SMEs when that time is appropriate in order to continue to advance our very, very long sales cycles. It would never work if I was just a lone ranger on that. So That's our sales process, and it actually is a microcosm of how we operate as an organization. Is that without getting too technical, our company is delegated, or our customers outsource a multitude of critical functions. And if we, again, if those things are siloed, if they're not integrated, if the gears aren't meshing together, we have no chance of success. And we do all that under a risk-based model. So we're accountable for more than just doing the work. We have to do it in a manner that fulfills certain contractual obligations, regulatory obligations, and of course does it in a way that was more economical than what our customers were, how they were doing it before. So that you need a lot of people who know how to dance together in order to make that happen.
So collaboration is not just a word. It really sounds like it's a core value. It's part of your culture at Health and
Yeah,
Artwork One. Was it always that
absolutely.
way, or is that something you guys really had to build?
I think that it's been that way for a long time, primarily because the core leadership team has been together for the better part of 20 plus years. And then I came on fairly recently. So like I showed up trying to interrupt this group old married couple dynamic, but everyone
Right.
kind of knew what everybody else was doing. But the organization definitely, I mean, collaboration, no singular heroes. I mean, those things I think are just elemental to our corporate DNA. Again, it works for us. May not be the right, success formula for every organization, but for us, it is super critical to be very transparent with the other parts of the business, so everyone can work together for that common goal.
Well, I think you said it earlier, you have a complex, long sales process.
Yep.
And I think anyone who's dealing with that, which these days, I think majority of businesses, we're all facing longer sales cycles than what we may have been used to in the past. Everything's longer, harder.
Yeah.
You have to work smarter. You have to approach it a different way. So I think what you're saying is going to apply to a lot of people.
I
So
concur.
what was easier for you, the marketing hat or the sales hat?
Well, it's funny, and from the marketing, I don't think that either are particularly easy. Of course, I'm going to say that, and there are some other folks who might say the opposite. Certainly the execution, if you have the right support and you have the right ingredients, I think that marketing would be easier or slightly easier to execute against, because I think there's some finiteness to, at least in the B2B side, what it is that we're trying to accomplish. The sales side, for at least for me in this role in this industry, has been very challenging. There are Healthcare is 20% of our GDP. I'm in managed care. There are tons of companies chasing dollars and dollars chasing patients. And the singular biggest challenge for me, because of where we sit in the value chain and the relative size of our value to these enormous entities, is getting their attention. It really, that our story is great, but my prospect has to go through 20 other larger or more compelling or more mission critical stories before they're ready to hear my story. So it is an arduous process to just get an audience. Once we've gotten the audience, I think we're in pretty good shape, but getting the audience is very, very challenging.
Yeah. So how do you break through that noise? Or, and I don't want to get into how you're marketing, but I'm more from the approach of from your sales team,
Yep.
how do you support your sales team as a sales leader to help them break
Right.
through that noise?
So two things. One, this might break your heart, and for the podcast, I am the sales team. I am the sales leader and
No, that's
coach. I'm
fine.
the pizza maker, baker, and taker.
Yeah.
And then I pull in those subject matter experts or other folks to support me. So, the marketing team has created some air cover, but I'm the guy on the ground. And to answer that question, Chris, it's actually the formula that I've embraced here. I don't want to say I've created, but the formula I've embraced here is what I would call the Woody Allen formula for success, which is that 80% of it is showing up. And in the managed care space, there are a lot of in-person opportunities through various associations or events. And maybe it looks and smells like 1975, but I show up at these meetings, I shake hands, I try to say something compelling, memorable, follow up. I mean, it's a lot of basic relationship building, blocking and tackling that can be augmented with technology and some other things. But if I'm not there, I mean, the way for me to break through the clutter is literally to show up. And most of the guys don't want to do that. Most of the guys would prefer to send an email, and use hope as a strategy. And I'm out there directly engaging with folks whom I think are the right people to advance my cause. So we're just chipping at it like that.
So if hope isn't your strategy, how would you label your strategy?
Yeah, so I would label the strategy, it's a hands-on strategy. I mean, it's a political strategy. It's shaking hands and kissing babies. And that might sound vacant, unless you have something compelling to say, but I am on a, for my organization in this world, and the way that we sell, even if the brand, and I'll just use, Humana as an example, Humana in Florida for Medicaid, of course, ladders up to Louisville, but it's not necessarily Humana in South Carolina or Louisiana. So I need to show up, find the right person, get permission to tell a story, tell the story, and then of course respond from there. So, our value proposition is compelling. The numbers are compelling. When we've never lost a customer. Now it takes a long time to get the customer, but we've never been fired. Our contract with any customer relationship has never been terminated because year over year we're creating value. So it's all of those things leading up to, creating that moment, that closing moment, but it takes a long time to get there. So I'm very open to how there might be other tools or techniques to maybe accelerate that mm-hmm. process and maybe not show up at all these different conferences. But until someone can demonstrate to me that that's a better way forward, we've made material progress in the last 3 years by embracing this, on the ground, tactical strategy, which yep. of course, tactical strategy is an oxymoron, but that's our approach. It's just to be very, 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 very close, physically close to the prospect.
Yeah, no, I actually, it's, I'm kind of chuckling as I'm listening to you because it's so 3 years ago, that was like, everyone was, oh yeah, we're out there, we're pounding the pavement. And then yep. COVID hit and yep. everybody switched to Zoom. Like we're doing yep. this now. Yeah. And that's become the new paradigm. So actually showing up and get in front of people, that's like you're standing out just because yeah. you're showing up.
I mean, I don't know if it's innovative, and I would prefer to have this conversation with you in person, but I can just tell you absolutely the my pipeline size wise and the progression of where they are getting closer to the bottom of the funnel has been materially positively impacted by making the effort to go there and not to have a conversation via Zoom or via email. It's materially different.
It's the same way in my world that, when we're doing our work delivering to our clients, we can do stuff over Zoom. There's tools out there, things like that, but there's nothing like being in a conference room with a big whiteboard.
Right.
And a group of people that their subject matter experts, the people that in the know, and getting the markers out and figuring out, doing the heavy lifting, like how do we make this work? How do we make this better?
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, there's nothing like that. And I tell you, like my clients, they love it when we come on site because they feel heard. They can see, that path forward.
Yep. Agreed. Yeah.
What's your biggest challenge in your role leading both sales and marketing?
So I think the biggest challenge that I'm going to give you two answers for that. I mean, I think the biggest external challenge is I say metaphorically that my customers have a list of 20 priorities and I'm not on the top 20 for almost any of them. The list of prospects, right? I mean, that's the harsh reality for me. And when they get to number 20, they don't go to 21. They go back to number one and start again, right? So, my challenge externally, which is both a sales challenge showing up and a marketing challenge, creating air cover or a burning platform to get someone to give a rip about that top 20, that's my biggest challenge. And I can affect it directly with my diatribe about showing up. The indirect thing is that I need to create the right materials and the right air cover and the right reason to pay attention to my story. And that happens in space, right? That's the marketing side of the equation. I think that the internal, you know, for my organization, actually, I would almost say it's a bit of the reverse, in the sense that I've rarely been told no. I bring an idea to the table, a way to do things. I mean, I don't have any material barriers to my success internally. I think that the biggest challenge I have internally is some version of inertia. You know, our just the way that we have even identified ourselves. I wouldn't even call it branding, because branding might imply that there was a process behind it. But the way that our brand has evolved is a little bit, you know, the nomenclature, the ideation around how we're organized, all that's a little bit self-limiting. It works great for us, you know, small to mid-sized organization, but we're at almost 400 employees. And for us to get to that next level, I think that we require different thinking that got us to that particular level. So I've been, again, given permission to engage with some outside resources to help us, you know, redefine how we present ourselves and to have a coherent, singular message, which after an acquisition we made about a year ago, it becomes even more important, because, you know, internally, we should only be saying we, but sometimes company A that acquired company B says you guys, and that's, yeah, that's limiting for us. So, yep, those sorts of things that you know, we didn't grow up as a marketing or sales oriented organization. So part of my role is teaching people how to, you know, think or say things a different way. Yep. So we're getting there, but I would say it's really maturing the organization through the lens of sales and marketing with my biggest internal challenge.
Yeah, it's amazing that when I come into certain companies that they get to this point, and you look at them, they don't really have a traditional sales or marketing function. And, but they still have got tremendous success. So then to basically, you've got this big oil tanker going this way and say, hey, you know what, we're going to shift course a bit. That's hard to do, you know, because you've got all that momentum going one way, which creates inertia when you're trying to shift and go in a different direction. It's not easy.
No, there's a willingness here.
How did you start that process?
Well, you know, so I was doing some consulting for the company before I came on full time. I had gone to grad school with one of the founders, and he had called me, you know, several years prior and said, hey, Adam, we're doing this big presentation for a company that I had never heard of before, but they're, you know, a Fortune 50 company, Centene. And we have about, I said, Marty, how much time do you have for this presentation? He said, well, we got about an hour. And I said, well, how many slides do you have? And he said, well, about 120 slides.
Oh, my gosh.
So he said, can you help us? Do you know someone who can help us make this a better presentation? And I said, well, I think I can help you. So I took a day off from work where I was working. I came in, you know, I ran a session with all the founders, and that's what had gotten me started. And then, you know, to answer your question, so eventually I left the organization and came and did some consulting and came on board full time. I asked a lot of questions first. I think that was the thing, you know, I could sense between the company president and the company CEO, there was this general frustration, and they, you know, and it was because of how they ran certain things, where if you had two people who were both in the meeting and they were meeting one guy, you know, who's following up, right? Like, no one knew who to follow up with. They didn't know how to follow up. They didn't know what the, you know, kind of the progression is of reeling somebody into a conversation, because they had didn't really professionalize that part of the business.
Right.
So I just raised my hand and I said, and I started on the marketing side, doing some recruitment efforts for healthcare providers, not for customers. You know, you know, my job is kind of customers above me and healthcare providers below me in terms of the communication. And I showed them, I knew how to do it, irrespective of the industry. And then I started asking them questions about this stuff. And then I raised my hand and I said, hey, why don't you let me be that, in essence, that coordinator for that particular activity?
Yeah.
And what made it work, what made it work for me in this company was I wasn't encumbered by all of the things that those guys knew.
Right.
I obviously had my own skill set and way of approaching problems or challenges, but I wasn't encumbered by, well, we've always done it this way, or if we do this thing, then we'll get stopped in this other spot. And that's what really built a lot of momentum for me. And I was, as I was able to show, you know, some degree of competency and confidence, it just expanded, you know, my role. So when I was here, when I got started here, there was just me. You know, I have a team of seven now. You know, they're on the marketing side, and you know, the next step for me will be to find the right people to continue to do the, you know, the sales building side of the equation as well. So it's right. It's been a pretty good run.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And because I'm thinking too that even though you don't have people maybe with the title of sales, in reality, you've got a leadership team that's probably very involved in sales.
Absolutely.
And so it's you may not be managing down, you're managing up. That's not easy to do sometimes, especially when you're new to an organization.
Yeah.
But you've got a real power team though, you know, that's like, you think about it, it's like they're heavy hitters. They've been doing this a while. They've got a proven track record. What were the biggest lessons learned that you took from them to help you develop your sales approach?
Maybe in an indirect route, the value, the embedded value of them not having this formal sales role was they had and have great relationship capital. They just didn't know how to necessarily leverage it, you know? So I think the learning there is, as much as, you know, I just promoted me and said I was unencumbered by all this stuff, there's also real value in the encumbrances, which, because they're attached to people and relationships and history and knowledge, you know? So it's been an interesting construct, because as I mentioned earlier, you know, most of these guys have been together for 20 years and in the same spot for 20 years. So, you know, I had a boss who used to say, you know, when you're inside the jar, you can't see the label. So I was the only guy who was able to say, hey man, this is what your label looks like. And that was not, I can't emphasize enough. No one ever said to me, hey man, you don't know what you're talking about. Everyone was very respectful of the fact that I came with an outsider's perspective and said, hey, you know, other companies do it this way. Y'all ought to consider that. And then it was the collaboration of saying, well, now let's fit that external model into our internal construct so we can do something with it. So it's really been a one-on-one makes three. I've learned way more than I thought I would learn about medical economics and, like, you know, all these other things that drive the actual business, which is the learnings for me, is that, you know, if you're a sales guy and you don't understand how the stuff works on the back end, you're bound to step in a pothole, and that's bad. So, you know, going back to some of my success factors about curiosity, you know, I have made sure I have a deep enough comprehension about how we, you know, make the sausage here. Yeah. So I'm able to convey that appropriately and not misrepresent what's possible.
Have you ever had a mentor in your career supporting your progression and development?
You know, Chris is a great question. And if you were to say at the end of this, hey, what's your one piece of advice for someone, which is what I share with my children, my two boys, is to get a mentor. And it's a huge gap for me, you know, career-wise, which, you know, I'm at a different spot now, and I rely on people differently, but there has never been, you know, that gal or that guy who's been able to say, hey, Adam, you know, you got to do this. I've played that role for other people. I never sought it out, and it's a limiting factor for me. So, you know, I'm regretful that I didn't find that. And I would say that maybe the opposite side of the same coin is learning how to ask for help. So I would just say that those are the two things that, you know, I have two sons who are in college, and I implore them to find a mentor and to know how to ask for help, because those two things are signs of strength, not signs of weakness in trying to advance whatever it is you're doing, not just your career. So wish I could tell you a story about a mentor, but maybe someone will tell a story about me one day, but that's what I got.
Yeah. I tell you, I'm in the same boat as you. I've been an entrepreneur most of my career, but there have been a handful of times where I've come across these people and I just like latch onto them. Like,
right.
I just want to pick your brain. Can I take you to lunch? Can we go for a drink? Whatever.
Right.
I want to pick your brain on some stuff. And I tell you, that is gold. And so I say the same thing to my kids. It's like, it's all about relationships.
Yep.
It's about making those connections, and it's about learning, and it never stops. That's the thing. Like, even at our age, I still am, you know, calling people and like, hey, you know, can we get coffee, lunch, whatever? Same as I tried to do 20 years ago. Because it just, if you're not learning, you are stuck in the mud.
If you're not learning, you're dying. So yeah. I think that's really important. And I'm not sure what our age is, but we're both not 20. So I know,
yeah,
I
know, right. I get the gray
I know
hair.
That. Yeah. I know that, but, yeah, no, I think it's really important to maintain that perspective about curiosity. I mean, the third thing I would say, which maybe, you know, at least the first two things about getting a mentor, and asking for help, I think are achievable. The third thing, I'm not, and maybe it's a third and fourth thing, you know, so I don't want to get on a rant here, but one is about reading. And unfortunately, with the way technology is and the way kids are taught today and other things, it's really challenging to get someone to read, which of course, from a communication standpoint, you got to write really good emails, right? These brief emails have to be very, very hard hitting. But I think the opposite side of that coin is writing. And I will tell you, as a marketing leader, when I was hiring marketers, that was the death knell for me. Like and there are plenty of people who are bright, have really good ideas, and can't write. And it's just, it's the game ender for me. You know, I require that, because written communication to me remains such an essential part of both jobs.
Yep. It amazes me. Some of the stuff at points in my career, I've had people write sales proposals for me, and like, and I just be like, oh my God, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking this sucks. And like, how do I, but it's like, to me, it's like, say, I'm like, we are not putting that in front of anybody outside this organization.
Not.
It's like, no way. And it kills me that it's like people can't write.
I'm just going to tell you, without revealing the human, I hired a person fairly recently. Yeah. That person is no longer with the organization. That person had a journalism degree. Yeah. And I've gotten more than one sentence without a verb in it. I'm like, I think that there's something missing here. Can you help me? You know, so I'm not sure how that person got through their educational process, but P.S. Yeah. It's if one cannot write, one cannot be on my team for the roles that I need them to play. It's just it's a deal breaker.
Not in sales, not in marketing. You have to be able to write. It's just core to communicating. It's more than just talking. You have to be able to write.
Right.
Let's shift the conversation about CRM. Do you love it or do you hate it?
What is CRM? I'm kidding. So I'm kidding. You know, so we have a CRM system. I love the idea of it. And I think it would be maybe career limiting to, you know, to say otherwise. I mean, I think it's hard to deny. And I've been in and around CRM systems for a good part of my career, but never heavily reliant on it. And I don't think it's because, you know, I'm a Luddite and I don't want to use it. I think that, as I expressed to you in this, in my construct, there's a lot of hand-to-hand combat. And having said that, we have invested in the CRM system, and I don't think we've done a very good job of it. So I recently hired a sales operations director whose role is to help us leverage the investment made in the technology. I am certain, even if it's just kind of retrospective cataloging of activity, you know, kind of this primitive level one stuff, we're not doing a good enough job. I mean, you know, my pipeline, I said it was larger, but it's still filled with countable numbers. You know, it's not 10,000 prospects. You know, that's the addressable universe for me is not even nearly 10,000. So, you know, I am certain that we can do more with even the rudimentary implementation that we have. So I've leaned into it by bringing on a resource who can address it full time.
I think that's a great idea. It's I just had that conversation with another client of ours where I just told them, like, look, for this to really work, it's not about the technology. It's about people, process, and data. I say this all the time.
Right.
You
right.
have to have someone who owns CRM, who's responsible for, who's establishing the standards, who's training people to the standards, you know, when it comes to data, when it comes to process, that really is keeping that watchful eye on it, making sure we're moving forward and we're actually generating return on this investment.
Right.
It's not going to happen on its own.
Right. Right.
You know, you have to be intentional about it. The other way that I think that really works for driving success with CRM is extending it beyond sales and marketing, extending it into delivery, that to help manage the handoff between sales and operations, customer success, whatever your organization might call it, and facilitating a really successful transition. Because, you know, when you're talking about a long-term relationship, like you're saying, you've never lost a customer, it's because you guys are delivering,
yeah,
you know, and you're really making sure that you're having success. So you go back over the history of a customer, that initial sales, even though if it might take a year to land them, when you've got that customer for 8 or 10 years, that's a small slice of the overall
right.
relationship. So,
right.
You know, when it comes to CRM, you know, looking at CRM from a marketing perspective, because I think traditionally it gets tagged with sales, but putting your marketing hat on, how can a sales leader leverage CRM from a marketing perspective? You know, what are some of the things that they might want to think about?
Well, first of all, I appreciate what you said about better promoting the success of CRM by not limiting it to, you know, the silo of sales and or marketing. I think that's smart. And there are some things that we have done in provider recruitment and kind of, you know, how they literally get contracted and pulled into our back office system. There is, you know, a tunnel through our CRM system that does that, which is owned by a different group. So I appreciate you saying that. You know, for us, our sales cycles, and you'd mentioned a year. I mean, I just closed a piece of business. The handshake for that piece of business was in October of 2018. So,
oh my, I think that's a record for one of my guests when you're on sales.
I would like to not have that record, no. But there were a couple of things that gotten in the way. But what didn't get in the way was a gentle persistentness on my part to push it forward. And I think that the other deals with that organization will come a little bit quicker. But the reason why I say that is because the interactions between my organization and a prospect may be separated by fairly long periods of time where they're processing, you know, again, on that list of 20, if they can put me on their list of 20, right? Like all those things take a long time. And I have long gaps of communication where there might not be anything really substantive to say. And, you know, CRM may be the tip of the spear, but it's connected to marketing automation,
yeah,
and other communication products from the marketing side that allow that conversation or that engagement to continue to happen without my direct intervention. So that's one of the ways that I'm looking at, you know, enhancing the value of the CRM system is that, of course, the data has come in through the sales arm. And if they're a prospect and we have to just nurture that for the next 6 months, that may not be me saying, hey, Bob, or hey, you know, Judy, you know, what's cooking? I could be sending them, you know, 4 or 5 content blocks, which then their interaction with the content blocks is, of course, you know, memorialized in the CRM system. So mm-hmm. I'll have some indications as to when they might, you know, be providing some more interest or buying signals. So that's how I see it right now for us.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think you said that really well. There's a lot of packed into that. We're at our time here in Sales Lead Dog. I'd love to break apart what you just said because there's so much there. But Adam, I really appreciate you coming on here. Like I said, I could keep talking with you for a long time about this stuff. If someone listening wants to reach out, connect with you, they want to learn more about you or your role, what's the best way for them to do that?
I'm very easy to find on LinkedIn. I accept all the invitations. And if someone wanted to email me, it's my last name and first initial, @healthnetworkone.com.
Awesome. If you didn't catch that, we will have that in our show notes. You can get that at impellercrm.com/saleslead dog, where you'll get not only the show notes for this episode, you get all our other 100 plus episodes of Sales Lead Dog. So be sure to check that out. Be sure to check out Adam on LinkedIn. Adam, thank you again for coming on Sales Lead Dog and welcome to the Sales Lead Dog Pack.
Thanks, Chris.
As we end this discussion on Sales Lead Dog, be sure to subscribe to catch all our episodes. On social media, follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Watch the videos on YouTube. And you can also find our episodes on our website at impellercrm.com/saleslead dog. Sales Lead Dog is supported by Impeller CRM. delivering objectively better CRM for business, guaranteed.